We continue our conversation on gun violence prevention ahead of the two-year anniversary of the Parkland shooting, with a look at some hyper-local efforts to keep kids safe at school. As federal and state legislation around gun safety continues to stall, some parents are taking matters into their own hands by going through their local school boards to get parents to commit to locking up their guns. According to the Violence Project's mass shooter database, more than 90% of school shooters are students at the schools in which they open fire. 80% of school shooters accessed firearms through their family. Last June, the Los Angeles School Board unanimously supported a resolution that asks parents to safely store guns. Donna Finkelstein, whose daughter was shot and wounded in a school shooting, spearheaded this movement.
It's very hard to pass legislation, especially around guns and gun violence. So to me, it's all about prevention, and it always has been. That's the best impact I could make and we could make as a community.
School districts around the country have followed suit with similar efforts, but many have been largely overlooked in the national debate about gun control. Jillian Peterson is a professor of criminal justice at Hamline University in St. Paul, Minnesota, and she joins me to talk about this. Hi, Jillian.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Can you describe these new preventative measures that parents are taking and exactly how they work?
I think parents are saying, you know, we're tired of waiting for Congress to do something. We know that perpetrators are students of the school. We know their kids in crisis, and we know that they're getting their guns from family members. So if we want to prevent this from happening, one thing we can do is make it harder to get those guns from family members. That's a matter of almost doing kind of a public health campaign to explain to parents the importance of safe storage, explain how to do it, resources to get it done, and then in some cases, the consequences of not doing it.
And how widespread are these efforts?
You know, I've just really started hearing about this. I think it's a relatively new approach. And part of that is I think we're just now getting this data out that says perpetrators of school shootings are using their family's weapons. So I think this is a relatively new effort, and it's kind of popping up in these little communities that are really pushing for it on the local level.
I'm curious, what are your own questions as you look at this sort of grassroots effort? Do you think that it would be more than just symbolic and actually be able to change the way in which families and parents store their guns?
You know, I hope that it would. We don't have a ton of data yet to know how well this works. It depends on kind of who you ask, but around 50% or a third of gun owners are not storing their guns safely. And part of that could just be a lack of education. Part of that could be a lack of resources. And so if we can provide that as a community, say, no one's saying don't have guns, we're just saying store them safely to protect kids, that might really have an impact.
It is amazing when you look at the different places around the country where this is being passed, or at least is being debated. Phoenix Union High School District just enacted a policy similar to what there is in Los Angeles. St. Louis Public Schools is going to vote on a similar proposal on Tuesday. Five school districts in Southern California, Denver Public Schools. It sounds like there is something really that is going on across the country that sort of speaks to the heart of how people are taking this upon themselves.
Yeah, and I think this is something that we can do. It's something easy, it's actionable, it's local, it doesn't take any act of Congress, and it would be really effective. And I think we're seeing kind of a shift in how we think about school safety, what we've been doing and what we can be doing, and thinking let's be really more preventative and let's take it into our own hands. And this is a pretty nonpartisan issue. Most people agree on it, so it feels very doable.
Why is this nonpartisan? Is this something that you think does actually get buy-in from both sides?
I do think it gets buy-in from both sides. You know, as soon as you mention the word guns, people tend to dig in their heels. But talking about safe storage, I think, is something that most people agree with. When we look at kind of public surveys, vast majority of people, gun owners included, agree that safe storage is important.
I mean, in the past, a large focus has been on lobbying Congress for change, but that hasn't been especially successful. Why do you think these efforts aren't meeting as much resistance?
I think because they're so local, I think because it's parents of a school and it's a community coming together and saying, what can we do to make sure this doesn't happen here? And here's something we can do. We can educate, we can provide resources, we can kind of take care of the people in our community and say, what can we actually do right here? So it feels sort of more connected than what's happening in Washington.
There has been a previous debate about, preventing more of these tragedies by, I guess, taking very aggressive measures, arming people and the like. Has that been met with a lot of support, or is that sort of dissipating?
For the last, say, 20 years post-Columbine, we've been doing this approach that's really aggressive, and it's about assuming that this is going to happen and there's nothing we can do about it. How do we minimize casualties? So it's active shooter drills, and it's facial recognition software, and it's arming teachers. Those policies, I think we can say, have not worked. School shootings are getting more frequent. They're getting deadlier. And so I think there is this paradigm shift happening now that we have more data to say, okay, these are kids in our community. They are in crisis. They are suicidal. They're getting guns from family members. How can we use that data to actually prevent this from happening rather than training people how to run, hide, and fight and shoot perpetrators when it does?
Finkelstein, who we heard from at the beginning of the segment, says, like you, that this is a nonpartisan prevention strategy. That being said, has there been any pushback to what these parents are trying to do?
You know, not that I've heard. I'm sure that there's always people that would read that letter and say that they want their guns loaded and near them. I haven't heard of any kind of organized pushback or even pushback individually on the local level.
Earlier this week, the two largest teachers' unions said they want schools to revise or get rid of active shooter drills. Why is that?
You know, more and more research is coming out to show that these drills can cause trauma to students, that they increase fear, and that they increase anxiety. And as that research builds, at the same time, we have no research to show that these are effective at reducing casualties. And I think that fact that we talked about, that over 90% of perpetrators are students of the school, gives you pause when you think about, okay, the perpetrators themselves then would be running through all of these drills and would know the school's exact response, which can actually be used to increase casualties instead of decrease them. So I think it's A, it doesn't make sense from a security standpoint, and B, we know that these drills are traumatizing our kids.
Jillian Peterson is a professor of criminal justice at Hamline University. Jillian, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.